alkoholyhtiöistä, mutta alkoholissa figurin sigran alkoholisella kaupalla.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namo
Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswata Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavari Pasachadesha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastri Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 82, Verse 14. Bhagavan
Stastata
Bhuta,
Vivikta Upa Sangata,
Asisya
Namayam
Krishpa,
Prahasan idam abravit.
Bhavanta sada bhuta. Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, Ta, them, Tata Bhuta, being in such a state, Vivikte, in a secluded place, Upasangata, going up to, Aslasya, embracing, Anamayam, health, Prashva, asking about, Prahasan, laughed, Idam, this, Abravit, said. Translation, the Supreme Lord approached the gopis in a secluded place as they stood in their ecstatic trance. After embracing each of them and inquiring about their well-being, he laughed and spoke as follows. Purport, Śrīla Viṣṇu Chakravarti comments that Krishna expanded himself by his vibhuti shakti to embrace each of the gopis individually, thus waking each of them from her trance. He inquired, are you now relieved of your pain of separation, and laughed to help lighten their spirits. My dear girlfriends, do you still remember me? It was for my relative's sake that I stayed away so long, intent on destroying my enemies. Do you perhaps think I'm ungrateful and thus hold me in contempt? After all, it is the Supreme Lord who brings living entities together and then separates them. Purport, Srila Viṣṇu Chakravarti reveals the gopis' thoughts. We are not like you who, with your hearts shattered by remembering us day and night, gave up all sense enjoyment in your distress of separation. Rather, we have not remembered you at all. In fact, we have been quite happy without you. In response, Krishna here asks whether they resent his ingratitude. Just as the wind brings together masses of clouds, blades of grass, wisps of cotton, and particles of dust, only to scatter them all again, so the Creator deals with his created beings in the same way. Rendering devotional service to me qualifies any living being for eternal life. But by your good fortune, you have developed a special loving attitude toward me by which you have obtained me. Report acquired to Srila Viṣṇu Chakravarti, the gopis then replied, but that Supreme Lord you are blaming is none other than yourself, O most clever speakers. Everyone in the world knows this. Why should we be ignorant of this fact? All right, Lord Krishna then told them, if it is true, I must be God, but still I am conquered by your loving affection. Dear ladies, I am the beginning and end of all created beings and exist both within and without them. Just as the elements, ether, water, earth, air, and fire are the beginning and end of all material objects and exist both within and without them. Report according to Srila Sridhar Swami and Srila Viṣṇu Chakravarti, Lord Krishna implies the following idea in this verse. If you know that I am the Supreme Lord, there should be no question of your suffering any separation from me, since I pervade all existence. Your unhappiness must be due to a lack of discrimination. Therefore, please take this instruction from me, which will remove your ignorance. But the truth of the matter is that you gopis were in your previous lives great masters of yoga, and thus you must already know the science of jnana yoga. Furthermore, whether I try to teach this to you in person or through my representatives, such as Uddhava, it will not produce the desired result. Jnana yoga simply causes suffering for those who are fully immersed in pure love of Godhead. In this way, all created things reside within the basic elements of creation, while the supreme spirit souls pervade the creation, remaining in their true identity. You should see both of these, the material creation and the self, as manifest within me, the imperishable supreme truth. Prayer Part 1, should properly understand the relationships among the material objects of this world, the elements comprising their basic substance, the individual spirit souls, and the one supreme soul. The various objects of material enjoyment, such as pots, rivers, and mountains, are manufactured from the basic material elements, earth, water, fire, and so on. These elements pervade material things as their cause, while the spirit souls pervade them in their special role as their enjoyer. And ultimately, the material elements, their products, and the living entities are all manifested within and pervaded by the imperishable, perfectly complete Supreme Soul, Krishna. A jnani with realization of these facts should feel no separation from the Lord in any situation. But the gopis of Raja are much more elevated in their Krishna consciousness than ordinary jnanis. Because of their intense love for Krishna and his most human-like, all-attractive aspect as a young cowherd boy, Krishna's internal potency, Yogamaya, covers their knowledge of his majestic aspects, such as his all-pervasiveness. Thus, the gopis were able to relish the intense ecstasy caused by their love and separation from him. Only in jest is Sri Krishna ascribing to them a lack of spiritual discrimination. So here we have the instructions of Krishna to the gopis after such long separation. And as this verse says, he embraced each one of them, though there were so many gopis. And as explained in the purport, he actually could expand himself into many forms, and he could embrace each one without the other gopi actually knowing that he had expanded himself. So in this way, everyone was satisfied. And then he spoke. So his speech has been interpreted on several levels, because the literal level of this conversation does not make too much sense as a pacification of the gopis. Because as we see here, Krishna talks about how the Supreme Lord brings everything together and separates everything, just like the wind separates the clouds or the blades of grass or the particles of dust. So all things in the material world are come together and are separated by the Supreme Lord. However, at the same time, he points out the special nature of the gopis by which they have their special devotion. But then he indicates that you don't have to feel this separation because I'm everywhere. So of course, this is not exactly the impersonal jnani philosophy, but we could say it is a type of philosophy for devotees who have a very say formal relationship with the Lord, and they respect him as the all-pervading one who is present everywhere, creates and destroys all the bodies of the living entities, etc. And so, in other words, more or less like the Paramatma feature of the Lord. So he explains here how the elements make up the material creation, but the elements also exist separately. So in the same way, the Lord is in everything and separate from everything. Of course, the material world's not made up only of matter, but jivas as well. And then he says that actually, I'm everywhere. I'm within the jivas, I'm within the matter, and I'm also everywhere within the material creation. So therefore, You do not have to feel any separation at all. So you may be thinking, I'm in Dwarka, you are in Raja. But you should see from the other point of view that I'm everywhere as the Supreme Lord. I have the power to pervade all creatures, all jivas, all matter, etc. Therefore, my presence is everywhere, and you should see that I'm everywhere. So this is not untrue, and there are some yogis and devotees who appreciate the Lord for this aspect. In fact, we say that the realization of the yogi is Paramatma. What do they realize? They realize the Supreme Lord as that person who pervades everything within the material world, and he creates and destroys the material world, but he's present everywhere. So it's a realization of the yogi. And the yogis appreciate that type of realization. They get great satisfaction from realizing the Lord in that way. So, of course, devotees also can appreciate that aspect of the Lord. And we see in Bhagavad Gita, in the middle six chapters, like chapter 7, Krishna talks about how he pervades everything in the material world. He's in everything and outside of everything. And this is also essential for devotees doing sadhana bhakti. They have to understand how the Lord is the source of everything, and at the same time he's in everything. Necessary knowledge. However, the people of Vrindavan, and particularly the gopis, appreciate Krishna in another way. Though this type of knowledge is very necessary for devotees doing sadhana, the gopis, though they are also aware of this, they're not interested in it at all. Because very prominent in their realization is their intimate relationship with Krishna and the experience that they get from that. So this predominates their realization. So though they may periodically admit Krishna's Supreme Lord, it is not an important fact, and rather, it restricts their feeling. So therefore, immediately disappears. So we cannot say that they're ignorant because they're unaware of that when they manifest the intimate devotion for Krishna. It is simply covered up by their other realization of their intimate relationship. So we see that here. The gopis on one level can accept, yes, okay, Krishna is everywhere. But on another level, not so interesting to them. So, how could this instruction of Krishna give satisfaction to the gopis? Krishna came and he met them, and then he spoke to them. So his speech should pacify them and satisfy them. One, of course, to satisfy them, to reassure them that he would not leave them, or that he would return, or that he was always with them somehow in an intimate relationship. But instead, we find this instruction which is predominated by knowledge, or jnana. Krishna is the all-pervading feature of everything. So this may be satisfying for Paramatma yogis and devotees who are predominated by jnana. They will appreciate this, and they'll be satisfied with this. But how could the gopis be satisfied with this? And how could Krishna give this type of explanation to the gopis, or excuse to the gopis, when he knew they were quite different from everybody else? So it looks a very little bit strange.
Mm-hmm.
And the same can be said of Krishna's message which he sent through Uddhava. It's a very similar type of statement. So why would he keep doing this? Talking to them as if they're yogis. So for that reason, our acharyas say that we should see another meaning in the statement, because definitely the gopis were satisfied. They were satisfied with Uddhava's message, and they were satisfied with Krishna's message. They'd never protested anything. So how is it possible if Krishna's telling them to be yogis? It doesn't make any sense. But yet they were satisfied. So, for that reason, there's usually another explanation of how these verses can be interpreted by the gopis. So, ultimately, Krishna assures the gopis that though there's an appearance here within the material world when the Lord performs his pastimes here, that there is separation, that in another form there is no separation. That is the apricot pastimes. So though they are experiencing separation now, they simultaneously can exist in that other level where they are united with Krishna. And then they don't have to lament in that way. So in one form they lament, in another form they don't lament. So in other words, ultimately there's pastimes in the material where there is prolonged separation, which causes great pain and separation. And therefore, the gopis may think, oh, Krishna is very cruel and indifferent and doesn't care for us. But on the other hand, they should realize that simultaneously they are ever eternally united with Krishna in the highest bliss of pastimes. So therefore, such an idea cannot arise. So in other words, by explaining this to them, Krishna shows that ultimately Krishna is not indifferent, and he's very attached to the gopis, and therefore he's eternally with them. So there's an appearance of separation for some time in the pastimes within the material world. But at the same time, Krishna is eternally present in another form, and with their other forms in another place in the apricot pastimes. So therefore, he's not indifferent at all. So that this separation is an aspect of pastime itself. And that obviously it will resolve at a certain point in time as well. So this is the way in which the gopis can be pacified, that they also are eternally related with the Lord, and the Lord is never indifferent to them at all. So they take that meaning that Krishna gives through these words, then they're somewhat satisfied by the explanation of Krishna. But otherwise, if it is simply an explanation of all-pervading nature of the Supreme Lord, it indicates that the gopis should ultimately be like yogis. But that's a lesser level. And we see many statements in the Bhagavatam how realization of the Lord in Vrindavan cannot take place for the yogis and jnanis. It's very difficult for them to approach. In fact, a few verses before it says, Durapa, for the Nitya Yujam. It's very rare for the yogis to have a relationship, even a relationship like that of the Yadus with the Lord, what to speak of the gopis. Therefore, the superficial meaning is contradictory to the teachings of the Bhagavatam and to the real position of the gopis and the people of Vrindavan. They're much superior to the yogis and the jnanis and anyone else, and even to the people of Dwarka, the Yadus. So, if for the Lord to advise them
to become yogis is contradictory, actually, to the conclusion of Bhagavatam. And that's why the superficial meaning cannot be accepted as the only meaning. And our acharyas seek out another meaning to those words. Huh? So this is, of course, we could say, confidential knowledge, or guhya, secret knowledge. Yeah. So sometimes the Bhagavatam does not speak directly. Of course, it is considered to be the conclusion of all the Vedic literature and meant for the people of Kali Yuga. But even then, people are of different qualification, and therefore some things are on a higher level and they're hidden from some people. And therefore it takes some thoughtful process and some intelligence and discernment to get the real meaning out of some of the verses. So these verses and the verses that Uddhava recites to the gopis are such verses where we cannot simply take the superficial meaning, we have to take another meaning. Because the superficial meaning will contradict the principles of the Bhagavatam. So therefore, another meaning is sought. So, though the Bhagavatam is, in most cases, very direct, we will find places where there is this indirect expression or parokshavad. We have to be very careful that we get the real meaning out of those words, indirect statements. We don't take the literal meaning, but we find another meaning underneath that, which harmonizes with the purport of the Bhagavatam, the conclusion of the Bhagavatam. Huh? These are some of the instances of parokshavad, or indirect expression, where the direct meaning is not superficially evident by taking a literal meaning of the words. You have to go deeper and see another meaning.
But just in the aspect of separation, where there was one pastime when Rukmini was told by Krishna that you should have, I'm not the right person to have married you, even now it's not too late. And she immediately faints at the thought and things like that. And then the separation of the gopis. In terms of separation, the between Rukmini and the gopis, Maharaj, is that because they are actually living separately from Krishna for longer years, but the very thought when Krishna told Rukmini faints, is there a difference in the first place? Rukmini separation, when Rukmini is told by Krishna that I am not the right person who should have married you, like, and if Rukmini faints, just the thought of separation.
Separation with Rukmini, you're saying?
It's the separation of Krishna. When Krishna says that I am not the right person to have married you.
Oh.
And then similarly we see the gopis live a longer duration in separation of Krishna in one sense.
Yeah. Well, Rukmini wasn't really separated from Krishna at that point. It was just a threat of separation or whatever like that. Just to test Rukmini and see her response. With the queens of Dwarka, we don't find such prolonged separation after they marry him. But we do see that in the case of the gopis. Of course, the purpose of that is to illustrate that in separation, they display the most remarkable symptoms. So this indicates their unique nature and how that their love is the highest of all. So therefore there is prolonged separation in the pastimes within the material world.
Maharaj, in the beginning of today's session you said that here also it's mentioned that Krishna was in several forms and he individually embraced all the gopis. Without the knowledge, the gopi was not having the knowledge that Krishna is simultaneously embracing other gopis also. And we hear this similar during Raslila also, I think, where Krishna is dancing with the gopis, and gopis have this understanding that he is only dancing with me, not with others. So why is that such an important, why is that important, you know, why Lord does, and the gopis are perfectly satisfied with that, and if they are of knowledge that others are also being embraced by Lord, and then...
Oh, well, if they are aware that he expands himself, then that shows the greatness or the power of the Lord. So then he's not just a little ordinary cowherd boy anymore. He's actually Supreme Lord. Huh? So therefore, that is covered up, and they get a more intense relationship by the understanding that Krishna is personally with them.
It has absolutely nothing to do with any jealousy which they may have, that, you know?
No, no. That's mainly to hide his powers.
Okay.
With regard to the gopis, who have apparent other husbands in Vraj, they are only, they are not the, are they the expansions, which means Krishna's gopis are never touched by other men?
Well, that's the explanation given, is that ultimately there's an appearance of them marrying other cowherd men, etc. But then in Gopal Champu, it's explained that actually those were not the real gopis. So it was like a kind of an identity, but actually they were different forms. And later on, when Krishna returned, then those forms dissolved, and the actual forms married Krishna. That's the explanation that Jiva gives. And here in the Bhagavatam, after the Rasalila, it's explained that though the Krishna had affairs with the gopis, nobody was hostile to Krishna in Vrindavan. So somehow or other, that whole affair did not create any disturbance for anyone. There was a lack of awareness on the part of the husbands and the parents and everyone else that even that was taking place. So that, of course, you can say is the yoga maya potency of the Supreme Lord. But the reason for giving this explanation that those were like shadow forms of the gopis with the husbands is that Krishna is the ultimate enjoyer, and no one else can enjoy the gopis. So therefore, those were shadow forms that were with the husbands.
But as we see, you know, that separated form of that Krishna, in one form he is with gopis, and another form he is separated from the gopis. But normally, this separated form from the gopis, well, this explains the Srimad Bhagavatam. But this one form of Krishna is with the gopis, not that much explain the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's almost like a hidden. You know, it's almost hidden. So how to understand this? How to accept this statement which is hidden already?
How to accept the hidden?
Yeah.
Well, we know that though Krishna performs pastimes in the material world, and he comes as avatar, he's eternally in the spiritual world. He never leaves. So that obviously, simply by that fact, he has different forms. One in the spiritual world, one in the material world. So it has to be accepted ultimately, simply on the basis that his pastimes are eternal, and he has eternal form in the spiritual world. And he also is in the material world. So it's not he disappears completely and suddenly he's not there. So therefore he must have forms expanded everywhere.
But in the material world, normally he's... when he's with the law, with the gopis, that form is not visible for the ordinary people. Normally, only devotees can understand this, that he is separated from the Lord. He is with the gopis, but gopis in one form. But for the ordinary people, it's very difficult to understand.
Yeah.
And the question, like Simaras, Krishna also said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, even that. He likes this parokshavada. He likes to be explained by indirect way. So there is a two kinds of, one is primary meaning, another one is indirect meaning. So, but Krishna sometimes accepts his indirect meaning, not a direct meaning. So, by accepting this indirect meaning, he is not creating some confusion among the people.
Well, the general principle is we take the direct meaning, but if there is some contradiction to other statements in the Bhagavatam or to the conclusions of Bhagavatam, then we're forced to take another meaning. So when there is a contradiction with the conclusions of the Bhagavatam or other statements in the Bhagavatam, then we have to explain it somehow. So then we have to take an indirect meaning in that case, another meaning to the statement.
That meaning only this Acharya or those who have got realization, they only can explain it, not the ordinary people.
Yeah. So obviously the scriptures are available to everyone, but we also say one has to hear through the Acharyas, you have to hear through the Samparampara. So we can't independently make our own conclusions of everything in the scriptures, including the Bhagavatam. We should come through a Sampradaya.
But sometimes it happens, you know, these conclusions depend on the according to Sampradaya also. Sometimes, like, you know, Shiva Shunashama, they give one conclusion, and Gaudiya, they give another conclusion. So when there is a difference opinion about the conclusion also.
Yeah, there may be. So those, of course, are details. So in that case, we accept within the Sampradaya, the conclusions within one Sampradaya, because we're choosing that, to follow that particular Sampradaya. So we follow those conclusions.
Yeah.
Well, it's a different point of view, obviously. If it's a different Sampradaya, they may not put Krishna as Swayam Bhagavan, etc. So they may come up with some other conclusions. So we accept that principle. He is Swayam Bhagavan, and his pastimes in Vrindavan are the highest. So based on that, we take the meaning of all the statements.
Krishna is Atmaram, but still he relishes the Parakya kind of relationship, which is condemned, which is condemned in this material world. And we also see in the scriptures, yadya dātārati śrēsas. Then why would Krishna do such a Parakya kind of activity so that people misunderstand, Maharaj?
Well, the activities actually are spiritual activities, so they're not really Parakya. They're only Parakya from the material point of view. Because as we said, actually those were not the real gopis who had the husbands, etc. And in the spiritual world, again, Krishna is eternally having pastimes with the gopis. So there's an apparent, we'd say, apparent Parakya that takes place for pastimes. So people in the material world may not appreciate that. So that is why Krishna is difficult to appreciate for many people. Nevertheless, the Bhagavatam has been presented to make Krishna accessible to people, but then again has to be taken through Sampradaya. So then if we get the explanation through the Sampradaya, then we can accept all these pastimes. Otherwise, difficult.
Of the feelings, and people, we try to understand the same thing with the material senses and the modes of nature, but the spiritual activities being absolute, why is that even souls in the spiritual world are not able to conceive it completely?
Conceive what?
The activities of the Lord. There also we see the difference of every soul having its own level of understanding.
Well, of course, here Krishna explaining to the gopis. Gopis don't understand the separation, that we should not take in a material way. Obviously, they're the highest devotees, so they're full of knowledge, etc. And Krishna also is full of all knowledge. But for pastimes, they appear to have some ignorance, or even Krishna sometimes appears to have ignorance also. But it's not real ignorance. And the examples here given of from the material world, material things, they're not completely true. They have some aspects Just like we take the example of the sun and the ray of the sunlight or something like that. Obviously, it's a material example. So we cannot completely correlate that with Krishna and his spiritual energy like the jiva or whatever like that. But to some extent, we can make an analogy, and that's all it is an analogy. Doesn't mean it's completely fitting. But some aspects we can take to get a little bit of an understanding. So these analogies are there for people in the material world. And when they've got realization, and then of course they surpass such analogies completely, they don't have to depend on those analogies. And they understand that the analogy is useful, but it's not complete also. It's limited in its how it can be applied. Because Krishna has, so you can say, achintya shakti, or indescribable energy by which he can do things. It's not really subject to material logic and material explanation.
When it's regarding Ranga Krishnabhu's question, you are saying that from the material point of view, there is a parakya rasa, but actually there is no parakya rasa, sokiya. Correct. But again, we see that there is a glorification of parakya
rasa. Well, it's not either. It's beyond parakya and swakya. These are terms that we use in the material world. So they may have conventions in the spiritual world, but they are, it's not like material dharma. They're only there useful for pastimes, that's all.
So in this place also, this kind of parakya kind of things are there, but only for the pastimes of the Lord.
Yeah, because in the material world we have marriage and illicit activities, etc., considered sin, etc. So these are rules of material dharma, because people are stuck in the material gunas, and therefore we regulate them. In the spiritual world there's no gunas, people don't have to be regulated. They're all spontaneously attracted to Krishna, so that those rules don't make any sense anymore. But we have some appearance of rules there, just for pastimes, that's all. But they don't have the same significance. So a person in the material world may think, okay, we have to apply the rules of dharma in the spiritual world. But it's not applicable because the people are completely different. They don't need those rules anymore. So therefore we can't judge the people there in the same way as the materialistic persons.
And we say that, you know, this material world is a reflected version of spiritual world. That means what is happening in the spiritual world and what is happening in the material is completely opposite.
Well, yeah, not completely opposite, but there is some similarity, otherwise it wouldn't be a reflection. So similarity, but also a great difference. So we have rasas in the material world, rasas in the spiritual world, we have forms in the material world, forms in the spiritual world. We got places in the spiritual world, places in the material world. All those things are there. So that in that sense is there, but completely different because here everything is jada. It is unconscious, the matter in the forms. Everything in the spiritual world is spiritual. And here the jivas are in maya. In the spiritual world, they're not in maya. And here they don't recognize the Lord. Everybody recognizes the Lord. So there's also extreme difference.
Maharaj, just one last question on this. Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita that if I do not follow dharma, then everybody will follow my path and the whole world will come to renation.
Yeah.
And here we see that many of the pastimes, the mundane dharma or the material world dharma is not followed. So I've heard sometimes that as far as Krishna is concerned, we follow his instructions. As far as Rama is concerned, we follow his personal example. Is that true, Maharaj? Is that
To some extent, but even Rama, we cannot follow everything. We cannot imitate Rama in all ways,
yes.
Obviously.
Yes.
But he's an example, an ideal king, so therefore we can follow him in that way, representing the ideal principles that a king should follow. But then everybody's not a kshatriya also, so they couldn't follow exactly even that. So as far as setting an example, that's what the Supreme Lord often does in the material world, but not completely also. there's always exceptional cases, not just Krishna, but other forms as well. That even at Ramchandra's Leela, but then you may criticize Ramchandra for doing this or that as well. Whatever. Yeah. Or killing, what's his name? Shooting him, Bali, you know, why did you do that? Whatever like that. So, there's things we can criticize also. Yes, in general, the Lord sets an example for people to follow Dharma, particularly if that's his purpose. So when he comes as a king, usually that's his purpose, to institute Dharma. But if his main principle is something else, then it may not be the exact example to follow. If he's a great rishi or Narayan or somebody, it's not everybody's going to follow that example. Or if he's Krishna and Vrindavan playing with the gopis, it's not that everyone follows that example either. So it depends on the function and the purpose of the Lord in his particular form.
Doing this is the Prabhupada.